Good evening. The town clerk informs me that we have a quorum, and I hereby call this fall town meeting to order. My name is Kate Blake. It is an honor and a privilege to serve as your moderator for this 2023 fall town meeting. A few housekeeping items before we begin. First, for anyone who needs closed captioning and is unable to see the screens, if you have a mobile device, you can follow along. In order to do so, you'll need to use the school's Wi-Fi for an internet connection. There is no password for this Wi-Fi. And then you'll need to visit the website sudbury.ma.us/townmeeting/captions. Second, everyone must be in a seat. We cannot have anyone standing in the aisles or at their seat unless I've called on you. Fire exits are at the rear of the auditorium as well as in front through the stage. Bathrooms are located immediately across the hall from the rear exit doors as well as outside the cafeteria. If anyone needs an extra warrant, we have a limited amount on hand. If you could also maybe share, that would help be helpful. But if you are in need of a warrant, please raise your hand and one of the scouts will bring them to you. A quick note about voting. We'll be using electronic voting this year. Voting at town meeting will be conducted using an electronic voting system purchased by the town of Sudbury as authorized by town meeting in May of 2022. You should have received a wireless remote clicker to cast your vote. When it is time to vote on an article, I will declare that voting is open. To respond, press the button that matches your answer. For yes, press 1A. For no, press 2B. The clicker will display 1 or 2 and OK. If there is a lag time in voting, those clickers may need a little bit extra time to respond. There's no need to press send, as your vote will be submitted automatically. If you want to change your vote, or you press the wrong button, simply press the correct button. Only your last vote will count. Once I announce that voting is closed, the system will then calculate the vote and I will announce it. The results will then be shared on the screen for everyone to see. If you need to leave the auditorium for any reason, including at the end of the night, you must give your device to clerk staff outside the auditorium. This includes even a visit to the restroom. You can only vote with your own clicker. If your clicker does not show anything on the screen at the time that you are voting, please stand up and we will arrange for you to get another clicker. I'm going to conduct a test vote so everyone can get comfortable with the voting procedures. Okay, so if everybody could just test your clickers pressing yes or no. Okay, I'll give that a couple more seconds. Make sure you're seeing the words okay. Okay, so I'll close that, and Mark, if we could just put the results up. Thank you. So everybody can see what the results will look like. Now on to business at hand. Please allow me to introduce to you the following members of the LS Chamber Singers, B. Pesca and Kenley Murray, who will lead us in the singing of the national anthem, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance. I now invite you to rise, if you are able, for the singing of the national anthem.
Stripes and bright stars.
Thank you. Just a reminder, as people trickle in, please find a seat. For the record, I have examined and found in order the call of the meeting, the officer's return of service, and confirmation of timely mailing of the warrants to residents. I can also report to the hall that the certified free cash, according to Lori Del Olio, town accountant, is $4,317,363. Technically, the moderator is required to read each article and all of the relevant procedural documents to the hall verbatim. As you know, Sudbury has adopted the practice of omitting the reading of the warrant by the moderator with the consent of the hall. Therefore, may I have a motion to dispense with the reading of the call of the fall town meeting, the officer's return of service notice, and the individual articles of the warrant? So moved. Is there a second? There is. This requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please signify by raising your cards. Okay. Thank you. Please lower your hands. Any opposed? That passes by unanimously. To assist me with managing this town meeting, I have asked Nell Forgas to serve as assistant moderator. May I have a motion approving the appointment of Nell Forgas as assistant town moderator for the 2023 fall town meeting? Is there a second? Thank you. All in favor? This requires a majority to pass. Please raise your cards. Thank you. Any opposed? That also passes unanimously. Before we get started, I would like to just extend a couple of thank yous. I would like to express my deepest gratitude, as always, to the dedicated town officials and staff who keep our town running and help with this town meeting. I ask that all staff raise your hand or stand. Thank you very much. Thank you to the Sudbury Scouts for assistance with manning the microphones tonight. From Girl Scouts, we have Ayana Allen, Alina Jendingian, Taylor Alterio, Taylor Garner, and from BSA, we have Wes Blake. Before we begin consideration of the substantive articles of the warrant, I'd like to take a moment to review some basic procedural issues. For more detail, please refer to your warrant starting on page Roman numeral 3. Every matter that is voted on at town meeting must come in the form of a motion. The warrant articles themselves are not self-starting, but a motion may be made to move in the words of the article. Unless a presenter moves in the words of the article exactly as it is printed in the warrant, they must explain to the meeting the changes in the motion. All motions to amend must be delivered to me, to the town clerk, and to Mr. Thompson, the technology administrator, in writing before they are made. If you wish to speak, please raise your hand and wait to be recognized. A scout will bring a microphone to your row and it will be passed to you. Only registered voters of Sudbury, non-resident Sudbury employees, or elected state officials may speak without permission of the meeting. Every time you address the meeting, you must begin by slowly and clearly stating your name and address. All remarks and questions should be addressed to me, and then, if appropriate, I will recognize town staff or officials to answer your question. According to our bylaws, presenters of articles may speak for a maximum of 10 minutes. And all other speakers for a maximum of 5 minutes, unless additional time is granted by the meeting. I will be using our electronic software to monitor the timing of those speaking today. Some notes on voting. As I previously mentioned, we'll be using handheld devices for voting today. I will remind you of the requisite quantum before each vote, and then I will announce that the voting is open, then closed, and then I will announce the results of the vote, which will also be posted on the screen. Lastly, a brief word about decorum. A healthy respect for both sides of an argument is essential if we are to achieve our goal of acting in the best interests of our town. I ask that you treat every speaker today with courtesy and respect, no matter how strongly you may disagree. To that end, I will not allow any clapping, hissing, booing, or other audible noise at any point during the meeting. It is within my powers as moderator to terminate the right to speak of anyone who makes disrespectful comments, whether directed at a speaker, voter, or town official. I would also ask that everyone keep their remarks as brief as possible so that we can finish this in one night. So we're now going to turn to Article 1. Before we have the motion, I'm going to invite Town Clerk Beth Klein to do a presentation because Articles 1 through 4 all relate to the bylaws, and it just, for expediency purposes, makes sense for us to do the presentation, and then we'll go one by one through each article. The microphone's not working yet. No. You want to talk into it? No. Terry, the microphone at the podium.
Okay.
There you go.
Oh, that's better. All right. The Town of Sudbury's general and zoning bylaws and other legislation have never been professionally codified. Over the years, the town code has been updated and maintained by various town staff. While this approach has served the town well to this point, it is in the town's best interest to professionally codify its legislation. As part of this process, there has been a complete review of the town bylaws to ensure that they do not contain inconsistencies, errors, and outdated information that could potentially affect enforceability and ensure alignment with relevant state statutes. This has also been an opportunity to make the entire code gender neutral. In addition, the town seeks to provide better access to the code and allow constituents and staff to more quickly locate information by implementing a fully searchable online version of the town bylaws. Over 135 municipalities in Massachusetts have had their bylaws recodified by this vendor. Professional editors and legal staff analyzed the town's general and zoning bylaws and submitted over 250 questions to town staff. Every suggestion was reviewed by the appropriate department or board. No changes can be made to any bylaw unless it is adopted by town meeting. The final step after town meeting adoption is submission to the Attorney General for their approval. Once the amended bylaws are approved, the entire update code will be available to the public on its new electronic platform. This will make it easier and more efficient for residents to find and use laws in a comprehensive, up-to-date, and understandable format, and for staff and boards to gather the information they need to answer in a timely manner questions from both citizens and other municipal officials, and draft and amend legislation more efficiently by using this program to research similar laws that other communities have passed. Articles 1 and 3 request that the town vote to approve the renumbering of the bylaws and other purely clerical revisions. Articles 2 and 4 contain more substantive changes, which will be addressed by the town manager. Thank you.
So Article 1, motion by select board. We need to get the motion out first, Mr. Surratt.
Move in the words of the article.
No, we're having some issues with the mics.
Nope. Move in the words of the article.
Thank you. Is there a second? There is. Mr. Surratt? I think your microphone is off.
You have to turn it on.
To the extent that the articles would change the way in which fees and fines are set, we depart from more than 50 years of, this, of Sudbury's tradition.
So under the Mr. Surrett, I'm going to interrupt you. I don't find Articles 1 through 4 to be out of order, and I think that your comments may be more appropriate for when we get to the discussion of each of them. So I'm going to move on to the Select Board for a report on Article 1.
Select Board supports Article 1.
And Finance Committee for a report?
The Finance Committee views Article 1 as simple renumbering and reorganization and supports approval of Article 1.
Is there a minority report from FinCom?
There is.
Okay, we'll have that now?
Yes. If you love paying exorbitant fees and fines, don't mind being misled, want to surrender the power of town meeting, and want to make the boards and committees more intrusive and expensive to deal with, these are your articles. If not, join with me in voting no. These articles are represented to be housekeeping, reading the 165 pages, which I'm holding up in my left hand. They are far from housekeeping and far from non-controversial. Being a skeptical lawyer, I asked for and obtained these documents, found them to be more than 100 pages long, and find that it would take the power to set fees and fines away from town meeting and transfer it to boards and committees and officials, expand the power of the Conservation Commission, the Planning Board, adopt several new statutes, repeal bylaws, and make it more difficult and expensive to defend against enforcement actions. If the Select Board, Conservation Commission, Town Clerk, and Board of Health would be given the unrestricted power to expand fees and dramatically, we would change very much the dynamic of the finances of the town. Under the Town Manager Act of 1993, the town meeting is the town's legislative body. The setting of fees, fines, and charges, the expansion or contraction of powers of boards are legislative functions. They should only be before the town if fully and properly discussed. Now, there's one other principle of town meeting governance. For as long as I've been attending these town meetings, which is 45 years, it is the principle that each article must address a single subject. These 165 pages do everything from telling us that non-hazardous liquids are a hazardous waste, to setting rules for having shotguns owned by minors, maybe that's a good idea, to changing the way in which one has to navigate a gauntlet if one attempts to do building or a modification to a home. Under Massachusetts law, a fee must be proportional to the value of the service created by government. If government creates a phalanx or a matrix that people have to climb through, and then you have to pay to get through it, that's called a self-inflicted wound, not a fee for which you get value. That's an absurd process. Now, I would urge that you defeat these articles. And if they want to address fees, and if management wants to address fees, we should see a separate article brought before town meeting at some future town meeting in which they ask specifically what fee they want to increase, decrease, eliminate, or change. And let us consider each one and decide whether we as a town, exercising our legislative power, want to increase or decrease that fee. It should not be a large swath. You know, those of you who remember history at all, remember that prior to 1980, when Prop 2.5 was adopted, there were no fees. One could use the town dump, now transfer station, without a fee. After Prop 2.5 is adopted, there was a cap on how much money could be raised by taxation. And so inventive and creative town administrators said, aha, we could set fees and raise them. Now, when the town manager came before the FinCom, I asked him four questions. First, how much money did Sudbury raise in fees in 1979, the last year before town meeting? He didn't know the answer. How much money did Sudbury raise in fees in the last fiscal year? He didn't know. How much did he think they wanted to raise the fees by and deduct the question. And then the critical question, will you commit to not increasing any fee by more than 2.5% per year? He said, absolutely not. We want to be competitive. Well, I know what competitive means in that context. Hang on to your wallet. So I urge defeat of these articles.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 1? I don't. Yes. Can we get a microphone to the middle here, please, in the front?
Kirsten Rapenian, 45 Harness Lane. I'm a little confused. Are we talking about fees in this article, or is this an all-inclusive presentation by Mr. Surrett?
May I answer the question?
Wait, let me finish. Okay. Let me finish. And I also wanted to know when the last time was that the fees were changed. And I just wanted to make a point that when we're talking about our $114 million budget at town meeting so frequently, once a year, typically there are so few questions about the budget that it passes without any issue. And I think if we are nickel and diming these codifications in the bylaw, then we're not doing right by our professional staff. Thank you.
So to be clear, we're talking about Article 1. That's all we're taking a vote on right now. The town clerk did do a presentation on all four for expediency purposes, and I'm going to recognize the town manager to address the other questions.
Madam Moderator, Andy Sheehan, town manager. Article 1, I will address only briefly and say that there is no change to the fee structure. In Article 1, I'm happy to respond to the previous speaker's comments regarding the fees in Articles 2 and 4 as those come up.
Anybody else on Article 1? Yep, over to my left in the front.
Frank Reap, Newbridge Road. I support Mr. Surrett's position on this matter, and I share his concern, and it's based on real life. Perhaps 30 years ago, there was a rejiggering of the zoning bylaw that was done in a wholesale fashion, just like this. And there were provisions that had just disappeared, and I was responsible for bringing a whole new, creating a new zoning district only a few years before, which was the Village Business District. And it, years later, did I discover that some very important provisions had just disappeared without comment. And we just trusted our staff. And we didn't do our own due diligence. And one of the provisions that just disappeared into the vapors was the matter of banning the sale of firearms in the Village Business District. Today, you can open a gun shop in the Village Business District thanks to that move. So I support the defeat of all four articles.
Anyone else on Article 1? You could front kind of to the side. Yep. And I'm also just going to say that anybody in the balcony, I don't have any microphone runners up there, so if you have a comment or wish to be heard, I'd ask that you come downstairs. No.
Sadly.
Try again. Sounds like it's on. Try talking into it, sir. No. I think the scout's going to help you.
Is it on now? It sure
yeah.
is. I would be amazed if a 163-page document was presented to me by an attorney or anyone else and said, oh, Don, why don't you just sign this? This is just housekeeping. Must be one hell of a house if it has 163 pages to clean it up. I find it offensive to present a document with 163 pages and call it housekeeping. I would wonder what really is on, and I'm wondering why don't we have all 163 words printed out and handed to everyone so they can memorize it before they come to the meeting. I vote against Article 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Can you just repeat your name, sir, for our record?
Donald Sherman, 42 Rainer Road.
Thank you. In the front center, please.
Jan Hardenberg, 7 Tippling Rock Road. The full document and the red line version are on the website. They've been there. I first started looking at them over the weekend. I think Article 1 is really just renumbering, and that we should hold off further discussion until Article 2. But I just want to say I support Article 1. Thanks.
Who had the question? Ms. Rupinian? I'm going to call two more. Mr. Garvin, from right in front of you, please. And then I'll go over here.
Steve Garvin, 26 Bowditch Road in Sudbury. I'm the chairman of the planning board. The planning board had a properly noticed public hearing to discuss this matter, and there were no objections from the board at that meeting after a number of questions.
We'll do one last final comment in the front.
Michael Ladd, 121 Concord Road. Even Article 1 has sections of it changing the authority of who raises the fines from town meeting to the select board. Is that a misunderstanding?
Can we hear from the town manager on that?
Thank you, Madam Moderator. So Article 1 is clerical and ministerial revisions to the bylaws, to the general bylaws. So it does not address the zoning bylaws. Article 1 only addresses the general bylaws. It standardizes the treatment of certain terms, such as the Commonwealth of Mass general laws, whether the word town is capitalized or not capitalized. It makes the entire general bylaws gender neutral, removing he and him where it appears and inserting they in its place, replacing the word or the term Board of Selectmen with Select Board, makes changes to certain positions, such as Town Treasurer, to reflect what the current term or position title is, and makes other similar, what we would describe and what are generally described as non-substantive ministerial changes. It does not change the fee-setting authority for any fees.
Thank you. I see that now. It's Article 2 that starts that.
Okay, so we will now take a vote on Article 1. The quantum of vote required for passage is majority. Voting is now open. And again, your clickers may need a couple minutes or seconds to get back into the system. Couple more seconds on voting. Okay, voting is now closed. And the results are that that passed. We'll move on to Article 2. Codification of general bylaws, additional specific changes, motion by Select Board.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. We've already done the presentation. At this time, I'd like to invite Nancy Brumback from the League of Women Voters to the podium. Actually, I'm sorry. One, Ms. Brumback, I'm just going to ask the boards for their position, but you can stay right there. So can I have the select board's position on Article 2?
Select Board voted to support 4-1.
And Finance Committee for their position on Article 2?
The Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 2. We considered the article because it does contain a substantive change with respect to finances, and that the article moves control over fees from the town meeting to the Select Board and other town departments and committees. We appreciate the town manager's judgment that having the town meeting set fees has been awkward and inefficient, and that it has led to fees that have not kept pace with the cost of services that they support, and to a fee structure that is not consistent with and is lower than that of other towns. This in turn has placed a greater burden on taxpayers who have had to make up the difference in the cost of the services at issue. Moving the fee setting as proposed will allow for more agility, and while town meeting will no longer have direct control over fees, there are state laws that control the amount of fees, and town meeting could address fees through bylaws in the future if it objected to the decisions of the town departments and committees.
Is there a minority report
there
from
is.
Finance Committee?
Essentially the same points in minority I made on the last article with this additional point. The Home Rule Amendment and the Town Manager Act says that the town meeting is the town's legislature. We should not abdicate our powers as a town meeting to control the fees and fines. I would urge rejection of this article, even if the League's amendment is adopted, although I think they're moving in the right direction. I don't want to give individual boards and committees the power to raise fees without limitation. You know, that's a prescription for disaster. Yes, you can bring articles later to try and unscramble it after people are thoroughly infuriated when their fee goes from $50 to $500. But let's not give the boards and committees that power. Let's keep it right here at town meeting.
Ms. Brumback.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. My name is Nancy Brumback, 36 Canterbury Drive. I'm speaking on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Sudbury. I make a motion to amend Article 2 to remove the following provisions. And I think, Madam Moderator, we were going to...
Yeah, so the League of Women Voters has a lengthy, I'm sorry, I feel like there's feedback, a lengthy amendment. We're going to put it on the screen. Ms. Brumback's going to walk everybody through it, not read it verbatim. Unless anybody here would like her to read it verbatim, please raise your hand, in which case she will do that. Okay, so I think we're just going to walk through it generally.
Thank you. It is lengthy. So the... amend Article 2 to remove the following provisions, and I'll just do the titles of them because you can read them on the screen. Article 2, Fire Alarm Systems, Sections 109.8 and 109.9. Then Section 117.11e, the fee for a duplicate dog tag. Section 117.14, a fee for failure to license your dog. Chapter 129, Buildings and Constructions, Article 1, fees for pumping water from a private building. Chapter 156, fines on environmental protection laws, and these would be the plastic bag, fines on the plastic bag ban, the sale of bottled water, use of polystyrene containers, and use of disposable plastic items. Then Chapter 170, fees and charges for Article 1, gasoline tank removals, and Article 3, wiring permits. Chapter 175, fire prevention, licenses and fees for storage of inflammable fluids. Chapter 283, Wetlands, Section 283-4, Subsection D, that whole subsection. And those are the specific provisions that we ask be removed from Article 2. The League will offer a similar amendment to Article 4, and my comments, in the interest of time, will apply to both amendments. The League proposes removing the provisions in this article that change the authority to set specified fees and fines. We propose instead that those provisions be presented as a separate warrant article at a future town meeting. As has been pointed out, those provisions would remove the authority to set these specified fees and fines from town meeting, Sudbury's legislative body, and give it to designated boards and officials in the executive branch. Presenting those provisions in a separate warrant article will enable a full discussion of the pros and cons of such a move and then an informed vote at a future town meeting. A separate warrant article will also allow these changes to be considered apart from the needed edits and revisions to the town's general laws and zoning, general bylaws and zoning bylaw in Articles 2 and 4. The League takes no stand tonight on the changes recommended in these provisions. We ask only that they be removed from the article and then offered at a future town meeting if those proposing these changes wish to do so. If the League amendment to Article 2 and Article 4 as well is not passed and the articles remain as submitted, then tonight's vote will include the Hall's decision on the proposed changes in the way specified fees and bylaws are determined, along with these housekeeping edits and revisions in these two articles. We urge you to vote yes on this amendment and allow town meeting to take up these changes in fees and fines in a separate vote in the future. Thank you.
Is there a second on the motion to amend? There is. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 2 motion to amend? Town Manager Sheehan?
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Just a couple of comments, and thank you to the League for offering the amendment and furthering the conversation. While I understand, I think I understand the rationale behind the amendment and certainly the comments that were made earlier by Mr. Surrett, I don't think that they really apply in Sudbury. There's plenty of reason to be distrustful of government. We can't deny that. I can't deny that. In many cases, it is well-earned and well-deserved. However, I don't think that is the case here. There is no, in fact, there is no evidence of abuse of fee-setting authority by the boards that have that authority now. The select board, is the fee-setting authority for numerous licenses, common victular licenses, alcohol licenses, etc. Those licenses are issued every year. Those fees for those renewals are collected every year. The board has ample opportunity to abuse that authority if it wants to. There is no evidence that it has done so. In terms of the concern that town meeting is giving up its authority, it is transferring that authority to the management of the community and to the boards and committees that serve the community. As recently as May of this year, I stood at this podium with the small wireless bylaw. In that bylaw, there is a provision that the permit granting authority can establish reasonable regulations, including fees, for the enforcement of that bylaw. I don't believe that fees were raised as an issue there, or the concern about fees were raised at that time. And then finally, I would say that, or two last points. At any point, town meeting can take back the authority to set the fees. It is easily accomplished with a citizen's petition requiring only 10 signatures. Our form of government is extremely inefficient. This is a very small measure to gain back some of that efficiency, and I would ask for your vote to reject the amendment and support the articles as written. Thank you.
The quantum of vote required for passage of the motion to amend is majority. Voting is now open on the motion to amend Article 2. Few more seconds. Voting is now closed on the motion to amend, and that passes. So we will now have anybody wants to be heard on the original motion as amended? Questions or discussion? I see none. So let's move. Oh, right in the middle here.
Hopefully it's on. Yes?
It's on.
Rebecca Cutting, 381 Maynard Road. I think there are more than ministerial propositions, and I'm about to walk you through four of them that I've found. One is the one with the Community Preservation Act and the artificial turf funding. That seems to me to be something that is beyond ministerial, unless there's some provision in the CPC that discusses artificial turf. Then under equal opportunity, the definition of what constitutes discrimination started out with religion, sex, national origin, or age, adds religious creed, national origin, sex, gender identity, sexual orientation, shall not include persons whose sexual orientation involves minor children, and goes on. I think that's pretty substantive as well. So then under environmental protection, there's a series of bottled water, plastic bags, polystyrene, and it strikes all of the offenses and penalties. And I have a question on this one. I think that's could be substantive if the original article that we voted on contained those provisions. So could someone answer that one?
Town Manager Sheehan.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. So I'll address just the first two, the first being the reference to artificial turf under the Community Preservation Act section. That is a reflection of I believe it was a court case that led to an amendment to the CPA statute in 2012. There were a number of communities that were using CPA funds to install field turf on their athletic fields, and there was a case that challenged the appropriateness of that under the CPA, and the courts found that that was in fact not appropriate, and then the statute was amended, or the Department of Revenue's guidance on CPC. So it is no longer allowable to use CPC funds for field turf. The discrimination clause is just a reflection of the changed or the modernization of the language that is in the bylaw or that is appropriate to be in the bylaw. Our language, I don't know what the origin of that is, how long it was when it was initially installed, but the company that worked on this codification project for us brought forth this language as being reflective of the current status of that language.
One more question. Just you shouldn't be turning up. Don't turn the microphones on and off. Give it a try.
Hello?
Yeah. There you go.
So I appreciate the explanation on CPC. I suppose that could be characterized as ministerial. It would have been helpful to have known that was the origin of it. The second one on the gender identification, did the consultant identify the source of its? I mean, it wasn't statutory like the CPC on the first one. It was just a general. Where did it come from, I guess is what I'm asking.
Town Manager Sheehan.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. I don't, the consultant did not identify the source in that case.
Can you hand the microphone back? Oh.
She has an answer.
If you have a question, sure, rise.
Well, Gail Wright, Poconoket Avenue, 110. I'm just saying we now have a state law that gender or that sexual orientation cannot be discriminated, and gender identification has become part of that in Massachusetts. So I would assume that the original wording was put in before that was an issue. That's my understanding, at least.
Okay, I'm going to have one more comment in the back. Ms. Bell?
I beg your pardon. I didn't get an answer to my third question on the...
We've run about 5 minutes for your comments and questions, well, so we're going to move on.
My
you
question
could just
is,
hand the microphone back,
you,
please. Please
would
hand the microphone back.
I ask the hall if I
please
can
hand
leave.
The, ma'am, please hand the microphone back.
Madam Moderator, I've asked the permission
we've,
to ask the hall.
We've been keeping track of time, and you've had your 5 minutes. Please hand the microphone back.
So I didn't get an answer on my last question.
Please hand the microphone back.
Whether that was a bylaw or not.
In the back, please, one last comment.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Kay Bell, Old Lancaster Road. I would like to ask a question about Chapter 20 on page 3 in the booklet. It is the discrimination clause that we were just touching upon. In that clause, even though our self-evaluation for ADA compliance specifically directed the town to include policies, statements about no discrimination against people with disabilities in all things, including employment, nowhere in that, I couldn't find anywhere in that paragraph that we will not be discriminating against people with disabilities. So can I please get an answer to that?
Town Manager Sheehan.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. I believe that is covered adequately under the Americans with Disabilities Act that was passed in, I believe, 1990, the federal statute that governs discrimination against individuals with disabilities.
One follow-up question?
Just a follow-up on that. All of these other categories of discrimination are also covered by federal laws. So I don't understand why the disability category is not included in this particular paragraph.
Town Manager Sheehan?
I don't have a further answer to the question.
Okay. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 2 as amended is majority. Voting is now open. Few more seconds. Okay, voting is closed. Article 2 passes by more than majority. Article 3, codification of zoning bylaw renumbering. Motion by Select Board.
Move in the words of the article.
Can you say that again?
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Select Board for a report.
Select board supports.
Finance Committee for a report.
FinCom recommend. FinCom recommends approval.
FinCom minority report.
Same opposition without repeating myself.
Okay. Does the planning board wish to be heard? Okay. Anybody wish to discuss Article 3? Comments or questions? I see none. Quantum of vote required for passage of Article 3 is 2/3. Voting is now open. Voting will be open for a few more seconds. Voting is now closed. Article 3 passes by more than 2/3 majority. Article 4, codification of zoning bylaws, additional changes. Motion by select board.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Select board for report.
Supports 4-1.
Finance Committee for report.
Finance Committee recommends approval.
Okay. Is there a minority report from Finance Committee?
Yes. Urge defeat.
Okay. At this point, I'd like to have Ms. Brumback back to the podium for a motion to amend.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Nancy Brumback, 36 Canterbury Drive, speaking on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Sudbury. I move to amend Article 4 to remove the following provisions. Section 3147, the access fee per space shall and delete equal 800 and substitute be determined by vote of the Planning Board. Delete index to change subsequent to 1994 in the Consumer Price Index for all urban consumers as published by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. And to remove Section 3259AJ, a permit for portable signs shall be issued at the discretion of the building inspector for a period not to exceed 1 year and strike at a fee of $250 annually and add an annual fee to be determined by the vote of the select board. The League again proposes that the provisions in this article that change the authority to set specified fees would be removed, and we propose that those provisions be presented as a separate warrant article for full discussion and vote at a future town meeting. I will not repeat the comments I made earlier on the similar amendment to Article 2. Again, if the League amendment to Article 4 is not passed,
she's making the amendment, then we'll have a second, and then we'll have a vote on it.
Tonight, if the article is not passed, then tonight's vote will include the Hall's decision on the proposed changes in the way these specified zoning bylaws fees are determined. Again, the League urges you to vote yes on this amendment and allow town meeting to take up changes in zoning bylaws fees in a separate vote in the future. Thank you.
Is there a second on the motion to amend? There is. Does anybody wish to be heard on the motion to amend? Let's take a vote on the motion to amend Article 4. Quantum of vote required for passage of the motion to amend is majority. Voting is now open. Voting will remain open for a few more seconds. Okay, voting is now closed. The amendment to Article 4 passes by more than majority. Does anybody wish to be heard on the original motion as amended? I don't see anybody. So we will now vote on Article 4 as amended. Quantum of vote required for passage is 2/3. Voting is now open. voting will remain open for a few more seconds. Voting on the amended Article 4 is now closed. That did not pass. Article 5, establish... So our computer is not correct. Yeah. So it passed, but our computer's confused. It did fail. Okay. No. Yes, in the back. Can somebody get a microphone back there in the middle? It's not on. You shouldn't have to. It should already be on when it comes to you. Yes, it barely failed. It failed, yes. We're going to move on to Article 5. Yes.
That's good. Do we go back and vote on the original?
Yeah. We amended the article, and that passed, so that's what the vote was, and that's the final vote, and it failed. Okay. Article 5, establish opioid stabilization fund. Motion by select board.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by town manager Sheehan.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Andy Sheehan, Town Manager. So Article 5 is the establishment of a stabilization fund, a special purpose stabilization fund. You've heard us talk about stabilization funds in the past. You'll hear us talk about them again in the future in a little while. But this one is specific for the collection of opioid settlement funds. There are a number of lawsuits that have been filed by state attorneys general against the manufacturers and distributors of opioids. And the outcome of those lawsuits is a series of settlements in which funds were distributed or will be distributed to the states and then redistributed from the states to municipalities that joined those lawsuits. The statute or the, I should say, the requirements of the settlements require that the funds be used for certain specific opioid-related purposes. And the health director, Vivian Zhang, is here. If there are questions about the specific uses of those funds and what we are likely to use them for, or some of the uses that we are likely to make of those. But the only manner really available to us at the moment is a special purpose stabilization fund. It is a little bit cumbersome, and the finance director would gladly share his thoughts on creating yet another stabilization fund, but it is really the only avenue available to us for the collection and holding of those funds. The funds can only be used for certain specific purposes. This will allow us to segregate those funds into that those settlement funds into the stabilization fund, where they will be appropriated out by town meeting by a two-thirds vote at some future point in order to address the purposes that are allowable under the settlements. The motion tonight requires a two-thirds vote to establish a stabilization fund. Future articles, as I said, to use those funds will also require a two-thirds vote of a town meeting.
Select Board report.
Select Board recommends support.
Finance Committee for report.
The Finance Committee recommends approval. We voted 8-0 to support the article. If Article 5 passes, it will do three things, as noted in the warrants. It will create the Opioid Settlement Stabilization Fund. It will transfer already received settlement funds in the amount of $86,232.76 from free cash into the newly established fund, and it will authorize future settlement monies to go directly to the new fund. We believe this article is an efficient and effective way to track current and future opioid settlement cases and to keep the fund separate from the town's general fund. Further, our understanding is that several other municipalities are adopting this approach to opioid settlement funds and that the Division of Local Services has recommended this approach.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 5? Questions or comments? Yep, straight in the back, please.
Hello, Greg George, Meadow Drive. Just a question, if you can clarify when why some of these are a majority versus some of two-thirds on the bylaws changes, that would just help me a little bit, if you don't
sure.
mind.
Town Manager Sheehan.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. So under the Massachusetts statutes, there are certain votes that are required to be a two-thirds vote or something other than a simple majority. Adoption or amendment of a zoning bylaw, which we talked about under Articles 3 and 4, requires a two-thirds vote for most cases. There are a couple of exceptions to that. The establishment and the appropriation out of a stabilization fund requires a two-thirds vote. I think the original impetus being that it was for the money was set aside for a specific purpose. It should be used with a higher quantum of vote by town meeting.
Thank you. Hello. I guess I got one. Thank you. Oh, and I guess one more thing then, if it happens again. If I saw that, was it that we were one vote off on the two-thirds on that last one, that's why it failed?
I think we were about one vote off, yeah.
And so when you're in an election and maybe you're just one vote difference, there would be a recount or a replay, and do we not do that if it's so close in a case like this?
We're using electronic voting, so we're about as accurate as we can.
Unless it fails. But okay, thanks.
Does anybody else wish to be heard on Article 5? Okay, so quantum for vote required for passage of Article 5 is two-thirds. Voting is now open. Few more seconds. Voting is now closed. Article 5 passes by two-thirds majority. Article 6, Atkinson Pool Funds, motion by Select Board.
Move in the words of the article with a sum of $100,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Town Facilities Director Sandra Duran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Moderator, Sandra Duran, Combined Facility Director. I'm here to present Article 6, the Atkinson Pool Funds. These funds are meant for the design of envelope structural and mechanical replacement enhancements to the existing Atkinson Pool. Last year, you might recall, last spring, I guess, last May, I came forth and we had begun to discuss having the roof and dehumidification unit as part of articles. We withdrew that and we would like to design a more comprehensive project at this time. The dehumidification unit has reached its life cycle expectancy. The installation of destratification fans inside the natatorium will provide enhanced ventilation. Separating the chemical and boiler rooms will increase the life expectancy of the boilers while also decreasing repair costs. And the pool's deck and pool surround requires a full grouting and significant tile repair. In order to accomplish this, I'm asking that the article be passed for $100,000. The specifics would be for an architectural consultant, estimated at $21,100, for a mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and fire protection consultant, estimated at $10,500, a roof consultant, estimated at $53,400, and a structural consultant, estimated at $15,000. At the end, these design funds would address, as I've mentioned, the dehumidification equipment replacement, which is a rooftop unit, the natatorium indoor air destratification, the tile repair, dive pool skimmer box replacements, boiler chemical room separation, boiler chemical room structural repair, and would provide a solar-ready roof design. I have brought forth a couple of photos just to, for those of you who may have not been to the pool recently. Natatoriums, as you might know, create a lot of byproducts of chlorine, and so it's really important to have fresh air, hence the dehumidification equipment. With where the dehumidification equipment sits on top of the boiler and electrical room, there appears to be a structural concern. It's not an imminent concern, but it is something we need to address. There is a significant crack. The actual equipment and controls within the system itself, the unit actually leaks, and a lot of these controls are susceptible to moisture, so they fail. It's very very expensive to replace, and the controls have lasted their entire life at this point. The Atkinson pool, when we were currently, the pool was emptied as part of the Fairbank Community Community Center project, and we were able to conduct additional investigation. Investigation confirmed that the entire pool area itself, all the grout is gone. The tile, for the most part, is intact. We do have some tile that's popped off. The structure itself is in great shape, but the tiles are one-by-one tiles, and they require full regrouting. That's within both the dive pool and the lap pool, as well as the deck. In addition to that, the natatorium's roof, with our new facility that we are about to complete, we did attach the new facility to the natatorium, and this is a picture from the new facility, new Fairbank Community Center roof, looking at the natatorium roof. It's about 13,350 square feet. It's a ballasted EPDM roof. It's a rubber roof. It was new construction back in 1987. EPDM is the black rubber that we're all probably pretty familiar with, and ballasted means that there's rocks on it. Back in 2012, we did have a townwide roof condition assessment, and this was a roof that was assessed at that time, and it was recommended to be replaced in the year of 2013. It is now 2023, so we've gotten an additional 10 years out of it. We do tend to do well with keeping our items for a while. The Atkinson pool roof, the next photo you see is from that 2012 assessment, and in this, it's noting that at the ridge, you might see a little bit of dark black in the photograph there. And what it's noting is that the stone ballast has migrated away from the roof ridges. The next photo is from this morning. And the ballast, I was surprised that it wasn't more actually when I compared, but it has migrated away quite a bit. It has migrated away from the edges as well. And with rubber roofs, what happens is over time they shrink, and so they start pulling away from the edges, and soon they start to tear and leak, and We have been really lucky so far, but the roof is it's ready. So again, thank you for your consideration and for your time and for your attention. These are for design funds. I would then come back after the project was designed with a comprehensive project and an additional ask for the actual enhancements to the Atkinson pool. Thank you for your attention and consideration.
Select Board report.
Select Board supports.
Finance Committee for report.
The Finance Committee recommends by a vote of 9-0 that this article be approved. The article, if passed, will allow the town to hire professionals to do the items that we just heard. The information that they will get is needed in order to get an accurate estimate of what it will cost to do the repairs and maintenance on the pool area that are long overdue.
Is anyone here from CIAC who wants to be heard? Yep, right there in the back, please.
CIAC voted in favor of Article 6, 7-0.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 6? Okay. Let's start over here, please, in the middle.
Hello. Peter Schultz, 429 Dutton Road. I've been a swimmer for over 50 years. Chlorine in the water is necessary to keep bad bacteria at bay. But unfortunately, chlorine evaporates out of the water, and the chlorine in the air damages the lungs. It doesn't happen overnight, doesn't even happen over a few years of swimming for most people. But after many years of decades of swimming, indeed, you can get significant damage to the lungs so that it actually hurts to swim, which is the case for me. I think we need to protect our kids and the high school kids who use the pool a lot. And over the long term, it's a worthwhile investment. Thank you.
And then directly, want to make a comment? Yep, directly in front of me, please.
Hello.
There you go.
Rebecca Cutting, 381 Maynard Road. I fully support this as a swimmer. And my only question is, will this, do we think, help the leak, the proverbial leak in the dive well, which has been elusive, do you think? best guess.
Well, thank you for that question. We have chased this leak, and the skimmer boxes are the last thing we can possibly replace. And the grout. There are penetrations where there is no grout and no tile left. So although that might be minimal, I'm more concerned around the long-term structural integrity of the pool and saving that with the grouting. Than I am at the water leak. The skimmer boxes, I believe, those are encased in 3-foot concrete chunks, and we replaced, some of you may remember, we received additional funding, thank you, Select Board, with the ARPA fund, to replace all the piping, but we replaced everything up until the skimmer boxes, and those are in concrete, so that's yet another effort. But at the end of that, there's nothing left to replace. I mean, it's going to be a really, well, I think that we can certainly preserve this asset, and it will be a fabulous amenity that for many, many years with continued investment. So thank you all for your consideration.
Yep, another one in front of me, please.
Bob May, number 10 Northwood Drive. I have to say I am just shocked at the poor staff work done for tonight's meeting. The preparation, the information needed for this room to make intelligent decisions has just not been available. If I remember having worked on over 7 years on the community center project, the architect's recommendation to us was, quote, the pool had good bones. Okay? This is a long way from good bones. The project you're talking about, regrouting the entire pool, this is millions Okay? The scope of what you're talking about is millions of dollars. And I feel somewhere along the line there has to be a post-mortem done on the whole project. Thank you.
Yep, in the back, please.
Good evening. Joe Graham, Orchard Drive. While I think this proposal has merit, and I realize the sum is modest, I would find it helpful on this and other articles that we will later consider if there was some statement about what this means to the tax rate. Thank you.
Town Manager Sheehan, you want to explain about how this is coming from free cash and what that means?
Thank you, Madam Moderator. So the funding source for this article is free cash. So free cash is essentially what we have after we close the books in a given fiscal year. So when we bring in more revenue than we projected, or we do not spend all of what was appropriated, all of what town meeting appropriated, those funds become what we refer to as free cash. It is not the most eloquent term, but it's what we've got to work with. So there is not a direct tax impact associated with the funding for this article. There is not a the tax rate will not be affected by the passage of this article.
One follow-up, please.
Just to be clear, so if I see the words vote to raise and appropriate, the raise does not imply a raise to the tax rate.
Town Manager Sheehan.
Yeah, so in this case, it's actually a transfer. So when we say, thank you,
I don't
counsel.
Understand so, how I know it's a transfer.
Right, so the language in the warrant article that we mail to your house lists all of the potential sources that we would use to fund a particular project. We typically say to raise and appropriate, transfer, or borrow some S-O-M-E, some S-U-M. The details are in the motion that is on the screen in front of you where we say the specific revenue source. And in this case, it is free cash. It is a sort of a throwback to the 300-year history of town meetings in New England, the language that we use in the warrant article.
Anyone else on Article 6? Okay. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 6 is majority. Voting is now open on Article 6. Few more seconds. Voting on Article 6 is now closed. That passes by well more than a majority. I'm going to just, in case I get any point of orders, as Town Manager Sheehan pointed out, this was a majority passage, even though we listed it as two-thirds. Article 7, Fairbank Community Center Supplemental Funds, motion by Select Board.
Move in the words of the article with a sum of $900,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Town Facility Director Sandra Duran.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Sandra Duran, Combined Facility Director. I am coming forward before you today to ask you to support replenishing our contingency fund in the amount of $900,000. Before I do that, though, I would like to actually give you a little update and just kind of share with you where we are in the project and why I'm asking this at this time. Our First phase project date, completion date is December 14th. We believe that the project will be complete at that time. And we are being advised and are taking that under advisement, planning towards this to be close to the public from December 11th through December 26th. During that time, there'll be no public in the building, but there will be time so there'll be staff in the building. We are expecting that we'll have 3 days that we'll need to just stop all operations, pack, and then we'll actually move physically. Once we move physically, we have to then unpack and prepare to welcome our public back in. Many of you may know that we have come forth and requested additional funds for our audiovisual package for the Fairbank Community Center. That package will create universal access within all of our program rooms and our meeting, our big, huge multi-purpose room, our fitness room, and our arts and crafts room. This means that regardless of your abilities, hearing-wise, as well as physical abilities, you can participate in any of the programs that are within those programs. That we went out and bid that project, and when we received our bids, we received one bid, and that bid was in excess of the funds that we have available. So we have rebid that project in hopes that with added competition and widening the net and some modifications to our scope, that we'll be able to have a more competitive environment. However, if that first bid was indicative, we may need additional funds for that as well. Those bids are due November 1st. Currently, we're meeting with all town and departmentals, all the department staff and SPS staff, IT staff, to facilitate and prepare a move. The next photo that you'll see is just a moment in time. This one's an aerial, and it shows our new building attached to our old building. We are at a moment of transition, and it's been a great and interesting year as we got here. Right now, in October, we are energizing the building. We finally received power, and the photos that you see is actually Eversource up there pulling the power to the site, and then the workforce pulling the power from the various poles into the various transformers and then actually energizing the building. The next photo, what a beautiful photo, Sudbury. Sudbury in the morning, about 6:15, 6:30 in the morning. For you early risers who go into the pool and come up, these will be the images that you'll start to see. We're also getting ready, as you can imagine, for such a big building, we have to get our IT ready. And so what you see here is none other than our director of our senior center, Deb Galloway, on a tour, making sure that we're making sure that that senior center is going to be a nice element, appearing with all of the wires that are now being pulled throughout the building. Another huge milestone is we got the gas turned on, let me tell you, talking to Eversource and National Grid was a lot of work. But we got the gas turned on, and that was a great day, December 9th. Good day. We then, as you might have noticed, we've started to do plantings, which really just make the building pop and show some of the beautiful architectural features. In the back, we have a pergola that is part of the senior center area that is being finished and built. All of our pathways are accessible to go all around the buildings, and so anyone who is coming to the buildings can access the buildings. We have had some schedule delays throughout the process, not as significant as other projects of like size and timing, giving our supply chain woes and whatnot, but our latest delay was getting the power on. We were delayed by 33 days to get the power on, and that caused a lot of costs and other delays. We are, if you're thinking about when will the other building be demolished, when will the old building be demolished? Well, essentially, after we move into the new building, the contractor will begin doing asbestos removal, so it may look like we're not doing anything at all, but a lot of work is going to be happening on the interior of the building before the exterior of the building gets demolished. All that demolition abatement should be done by mid-February. Our pool viewing area won't be available until March. There's a lot of work to tie in the exterior bathrooms that needs to happen there. And then ultimately, the entire project should be done in May. That's all plantings and all paving. And so now we're getting ready to move. We're purging, we're packing. The packing materials have shown up. We're asking all of our town colleagues if they need a new file cabinet, new to you, a new desk, etc. But unfortunately, we're at the part of the project, and we're at the end of the project where we actually have significant financial concerns. Our contingency is running out. The construction contingency, for those of you who may not be familiar with it, is part of a project's budget that we put aside for unforeseeable costs, risks, events, or changes in scope that affect your overall cost over the cost of construction. You can liken it to that adage that people say, you know, have 6 months of your salary put away just in case something happens. That's what a construction contingency is, in case something happens, in case you need to buy something, in case there's a change. This town article asked for $900,000 to replenish the project's contingency fund. That amount is calculated on 9% of what is remaining in the contract to spend, which is about $10 million. This percentage is industry standard and is the same percentage that the project started with. We've just used the money that was there. These additional funds are required to ensure that we have the successful completion of the project. Now, I'm sure many of you have the question, what do we use the contingency funds on? Where did all that money go? Well, we've had 124 separate potential change order items that have come up during the course of construction. Some of those have arisen from coordination issues on the plans. 210 documents have been issued or raised. That's what's called requests for information. We've had 505 requests for information. We've had field conflicts and design omissions that have required rework. We found unsuitable soils, those were unforeseen, and they required replacement. We found buried trash from the previous construction project that was found that needed to be removed and replaced with suitable soils. Excuse me. We expedited the manufacturing and delivering of the switchgear because had we not, we would still be waiting for it. That's how long it would have taken. That was a significant expenditure. And a presumed inactive pipe servicing the pool's fire sprinkler system was broken, flooding the site, and cleanup and rework was required just when we were in the middle and finishing our foundations. There have been numerous other issues that required and still remain will require contingency fund to complete the project successfully. If you're wondering, well, out of all of those, you know, how much of them were unforeseen? Well, 43% of the items that took our contingency were unforeseen issues, with some of the most significant costs being the soils and the flooding. 20% were considered withdrawing and coordination issues. And about 36%, honestly, were town scope. As we start to do the project, we realized that our program required additional changes, and so we asked for additional scope changes. And about less than 1% were actually inspector requests. In the following pictures, you'll see photos of the flood, just to remind you where we were. And if you'll notice, look at the colors of the trees. It was about this time last year. There was an aftermath of that. We had to, as I mentioned, clean up and clean all the silt and whatnot. And some of the foundations had to be redone, and some of the piping had to be redone. The continued risks to the project's completion include, but are not limited to, because despite my best efforts, I can't see into the future, delays due to unforeseen circumstances, continued documentation and drawing coordination issues, unforeseen amounts of hazardous materials during demolition of the project, moving costs that exceed our estimates, something that we called second and third day requests. After you move in, this needs to be moved, we need this, we need that. Those are second and third day requests. Or catastrophic events that we just can't foresee. Currently, if you're wondering, well, what was our contingency? Well, initially we started with $1,210,003, and through various transfers of funds, from various sources, we ended up with a total contingency of $1,903,348. To date, we've approved $1,235,669 of change orders. So that leaves us with our contingency of $667,680. However, that's just of things that haven't been approved yet. We know of things that are estimated and pending, and we estimate and of those that are estimated and pending that we know that we're going to have to deal with, we have $686,178. So essentially at this time, we are now in the red on our contingency. And some choices will need to be made on those change orders that may affect the quality of the construction when we end, such as maybe exterior door hardware, for an example.
Mr. Duran, are you almost at the end of your presentation? You're running into your 10 minutes.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Thank you for your consideration.
If you have anything further that you want to wrap up in 30 seconds, feel free to do so.
All set.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your consideration and your time and your attention. Appreciate it very much.
Can I have the report from the Select Board?
Select Board support 4-1.
Can I have the report from the Finance Committee, please?
The Finance Committee voted 5-4 to recommend approval of this article. It was our only split vote this year. All of our other votes were either unanimous or had just one dissenter. So we have some words pro and con. Those voting for, there are $10 million of expenses left in this project. Those funds have been appropriated, but there are always unexpected expenses, and the project has minimal contingency funds left to address such unexpected costs. The industry norm, as we heard, is 9% contingency, so this article asks for $900,000. Without it, we risk a work stoppage until the Maytown meeting if there are unexpected expenses over the winter that we cannot fund. This would result in delay and potential additional expense. COVID and supply chain issues raised the cost of this project, and we have, of course, had unexpected expenses. That said, we do have concerns about the amount of additional costs that have put us in this position, and we believe we must review the project carefully and incorporate our learnings into future projects. But to ensure that we can finish the project over the next months, we need to provide this funding. And we note that if any of the contingency is not used, the remainder reverts to free cash. Those voting against say the following. The original $28.8 million article approved at town meeting in 2020 has grown significantly, totaling an additional $4.3 million out of budget spend if this article is approved. This excludes significant upcoming expenses attributable to the adjacent Atkinson pool, which will likely need more than $2 million in funding to perform the necessary repairs. Given that there is still $10 million of work to be done, the project managers should identify savings and reduce scope from the project until such time that there is clear and present use case for the spend. The town should adopt a philosophy of financial discipline to ensure this project and future projects are right-sized, support clear purpose, and are completed on budget. Given the significant upcoming projects under the Capital Improvement Plan budget, the town faces financial challenges if it continues on its current path.
CIAC for report.
The CIAC voted in favor of Article 7 by a vote of 6-0, with one member abstaining. The committee understands the calculation used to determine the request, but would have liked to have seen a risk assessment of the remaining items in the project.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 7? I see no one. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 7 is majority. Voting is now open. Few more seconds. Voting is now closed. Article 7 passes by majority. Article 8, Fund Collective Bargaining Agreement Firefighters. Motion by Select Board.
Move to transfer from free cash the sum of $475,000 to fund the collective bargaining agreement with the Sudbury Permanent Firefighters Association Local 2023 for the period from July 1, 2021 through June 30, 2024.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Town Manager Sheehan.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Again, Andy Sheehan, Town Manager. So Article 8 seeks funding for the firefighters contract that runs from fiscal year 22, which is July 1 of 2021, through fiscal year 24, June 30th of 2024. Tonight's request is for the retroactive amount of that contract, the funding for that contract, in the amount of $475,000, and we are requesting a free cash transfer to fund that. this is the last of the outstanding contracts among our labor groups. We have a number of union groups in town. This is the last one in this cycle that remained to be settled. It was a long set of negotiations that started long before I arrived here. We were in mediation and arbitration for about a year, and we were able to reach a compromise in August of this year that allows us to bring this forward. The cost of living adjustments are the same as with the other groups that we settled with previously, 0.5% in the first year, 2% each in years 2 and 3. There was also an adjustment to the base compensation for the paramedics in this contract. In total, there were about 23 sessions that we conducted with the unit. We were pleased to be able to settle this locally and not have to put the outcome in the hands of an independent arbitrator. So happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Select Board report.
Select Board recommends.
Finance Committee report.
Finance Committee recommends approval. The town, as you heard, recently reached agreement with the firefighters on a contract for the past 2 years and the current year. Until now, the firefighters have been paid an estimated amount based on the prior contract. This article allows the town to pay for the fiscal year 22 and 23 compensation increases that it has now agreed to. And we reviewed the numbers, the background data, and we believe that the contract reflects appropriate cost of living adjustments.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 8? I see no one. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 8 is majority. Voting is now open. A few more seconds. Voting is now closed. Article 8 passes. Article 9, Repurpose Malone Stabilization Fund. Motion by Select Board.
Move to transfer the remaining balance of $1,100,000 in the Special Stabilization Fund Malone, established under Article 13 of the 2015 Annual Town Meeting, to the Capital Stabilization Fund established under Article 13 of the 2019 Annual Town Meeting.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Town Manager Sheehan.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. So the Malone Stabilization Fund was established in 2015. I talked earlier under Article 5 about special purpose stabilization funds. The Malone Stabilization Fund was one of those special purpose stabilization funds. The Malone property, which is now being developed as Colebrook Crossing, was the town's sand pit. We mined sand for our public use in that location. In 2015, there was a decision to create the stabilization fund and put $1.1 million into that fund to be used to stabilize or restore the property or otherwise prepare it for future use for a town purpose or for sale. At the time that a future use of the property had not been determined. Fast forward a few years, the Malone property was part of the land swap associated with the Sudbury Station project. Malone, as I noted, is now being developed, and the development of Colebrook Crossing is nearing completion. So the original purpose of the Malone Stabilization Fund, the restoration of the property or preparation of the property for future sale, no longer exists. And under the statutes that govern stabilization funds, a stabilization fund can be repurposed. A special purpose stabilization fund can be repurposed by a two-thirds vote of the local legislative body, which is town meeting. So what is proposed under Article 9 is to transfer the balance of the fund, which is $1.1 million, to the capital stabilization fund, where it will be used to fund various townwide capital projects going forward. We'll talk about one of them in the next article that is sort of indirectly being funded by the Malone project. So it was a recommendation of the Division of Local Services of the Department of Revenue, Massachusetts Department of Revenue, to close the Malone Stabilization Fund. In a study that they did in 2020, they determined or realized that the original purpose no longer existed, and the fund is actually losing value because of the impacts of inflation eating away the buying power of that $1.1 million. So it was recommended by the Division of Local Services. It has since been supported by the Finance Committee, the Select Board, and the administration, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Select Board report.
The Select Board supports this article.
Finance Committee report.
The town manager stole our thunder. The Finance Committee does recommend approval unanimously for all of the reasons. Essentially, the property's been transferred. The town no longer owns the land, so there's no need to redevelop it. There's no need to use the funds for the purpose that they were set aside for. So we support moving it to the capital stabilization fund.
Any comments or questions on Article 9? I don't see any, so we will move on to vote. Article 9, quantum of vote required for passage is two-thirds. Voting's now open. Few more seconds. Voting on Article 9 is closed. And that passes by more than two-thirds majority. Article 10, Route 117 Mossman Powder Mill Roads intersection improvements, motion by Select Board.
Move to appropriate the sum of $800,000 from the Capital Stabilization Fund to fund improvements and installation of traffic signals at the intersection of Route 117, North Road, and Mossman Road and Powder Mill Road, including all incidental and related expenses.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by DPW Director Dan Nason.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Dan Nason, Public Works Director. So this article will fund traffic signal improvements at Route 117, Powder Mill, and Mossman. As most of you are familiar with that intersection, It was studied as part of the Colebrook Crossing traffic impact study. Two intersections along Route 117 were studied during that that development. One of them was the existing project that's ongoing right now at Pantry Road and Dakin, as well as the one westerly, which we're talking about tonight at Powder Mill and Mossman. So it was studied as part of that traffic impact study for that project. This intersection also meets the warrants for signalization, according to the MUTCD, which is the Manual and Uniform Traffic Control Signal Systems. Since we knew that both signals, one needed to be upgraded at Pantry and Dakin, and then a new signal is required under the warrants at Mossman and Powder Mill, I combined those when we put the Pantry and Dakin project out to bid. However, knowing that the inflated construction costs that we've all seen recently, mostly due to COVID, I didn't think that we could afford both, but I wanted to put it in as that bid to see if we would have gotten lucky. While we did not get lucky, I knew it was going to be more than what we had actually allocated as part of that project, so I put it in as an ad alternate. So this intersection does meet the signalization warrants according to the Manual and Uniform Traffic Control Signals, and what's included in the enhancement at that location would be new accessible pedestrian signals with countdown timers, emergency vehicle preemption, geometric highway improvements, you'll see those in a minute, some ADA compliant pedestrian ramps, traffic signs, and additional pavement markings for that intersection. So behind me now is a screenshot of the final signalization. I know it's hard to read, so I zoomed in here for everyone to view. Running east to west on the screen is North Road Route 117. To the north of that is Powder Mill, and to the south of that is Mossman Road. So you can see the some of the turning movements are changed. With we removed the island on Powder Mill Road. We're adding some additional double yellow center lines to channelize the traffic through Powder Mill. And we're actually upgrading with signals that are controlled by cameras instead of loop detectors in the roadway. Madam Moderator.
Select Board for report.
Select Board recommends support.
Finance Committee for report.
So the Finance Committee voted 9-0 to recommend against approval of this article for the following reasons. The town has multiple costly capital projects on the horizon, including 4 school roofs, the Atkinson pool repairs, and this project, among others. We believe that all capital projects should be considered together to consider how best to use existing funds and plan for future funding. In addition, our understanding is that the current project itself has not been vetted under our standard capital review process and is not on the capital improvement plan. Therefore, FinCom recommends voting no on this article and considering the project as part of our comprehensive capital review process in advance of the May town meeting.
See,
it's an additional report.
No, not that we agreed to in the committee.
This is not your report. This is an additional comment.
Okay.
Mr. Surrett, this is your personal comment that we can get to when we get to discussion.
All right, that's fine.
Okay. CIAC for a report.
The CIAC voted in favor of Article 10 by a vote of 3-2, with one member abstaining. The committee had concerns about the prioritization of the project, given that it had not been on any previous capital request. In addition, the committee was uncertain if the project was being proposed due to safety or traffic concerns.
I'm going to open up for a discussion. I'll start with Mr. Surrett.
Yeah, just a couple of additional comments. When Mr. Nason came before the FinCom, I asked him whether or not they'd considered other kinds of traffic remedies like left turn lanes, improving sight lines, an overpass for pedestrian passage. He said they had not. I asked him whether or not they'd considered the adverse effect on traffic and congestion, and he said he would not answer that question. Anybody who drives that road, as I do, knows that the Dakin Road intersection can back up traffic more than a mile in each direction. if you add another traffic signal in that kind of close proximity, I believe that the traffic impact would be a multiple of the current problem. And it now takes an hour to get from my driveway on Longfellow Road to Route 128 because of the increases in traffic signals. When I bought the house 45 years ago, I got to Harvard Square in 35 minutes. So anybody who believes that inserting a new traffic signal will improve the flow of traffic is the old saw, I'm from the IRS, I'm here to help you.
Okay, in the back, please. Did you have a comment, Ms. Dutta?
Hi, Deetupta, 40 Powers Road. I just have a couple of questions. Is there a Part B? Can we just put pedestrian lines and lighting? Is there any opportunity for that? Because in 2018, the majority of the community voted in favor of the Malone property with the understanding that $1.1 million would go to traffic. I understand that has been spent, but my question is there an opportunity for additional work to be done instead of the traffic signal, which everyone seems to disagree with having? I can just speak personally. I watched as my son crossed on his bike, and he was almost hit by a car. As a parent, that's frightening to watch. A teenager did get hit in that section about a year later. And about 3 weeks ago, I was turning left onto Powder Mill with my daughter. There was a child crossing with his bike, and a car attempted to turn. I'm very upset because I'm very passionate. Every year, between Chief Nix and the DPW, I'm contacting, you know, what can be done? Sight lines, a barrel, something. But a child was almost hit, and I almost turned my car into another vehicle passing me on the right, so the child wouldn't get hit. So if everyone's okay with, you know, these traffic issues, great. But I'm all for a traffic signal. Something has to be done. Someone's going to get hurt.
Mr. Nathan, did you want to respond to that question?
Yes, through the moderator. Thank you, Madam Moderator. Just installing crosswalks there for pedestrians isn't going to increase the safety of those pedestrians. The traffic signal and the improvements here are to increase the safety of the motorists as well as the pedestrians. That's the number one concern at this point.
Okay. Yep, the baseball hat. And then we'll get to you, sir.
Francis Hines, 49 Stock Farm Road. Good evening, people. Honorably retired police officer from another town. These constructions are extremely important for one reason. It prevents fatalities. And my wife and I were driving in that particular road at that particular location today, and it really needs something. And I think that the traffic lights are an excellent idea. You might save lives. That's what you want to do, save lives. Thank you.
And if you could just pass that microphone two rows in front of you, please.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. My name is Radha Gargia. I'm at 120 Powder Mill Road. I urge passage of this article. There is a pressing need for safety improvements at that intersection. I live on Powder Mill Road, and I use that intersection regularly. And I had seen some near misses and some accidents at this intersection. So anything we can do to improve the safety of vehicular traffic, pedestrians, bikers, is important. So let's help make this intersection safer. Let's pass this. Thank you.
Other comments? Let's go over here.
Richard Phillips, 70 Mossman Road. I've been driving through that intersection for 40 years and daily on weekdays for 40 years, and I've never had trouble getting through it. Sometimes there's no traffic. Sometimes you have to wait 5, 10, or 20 seconds. So I would be against the lights, although it's hard to argue against safety.
Okay. And I think there was somebody in the back. Yep.
Hi, Martin. Hi, Martin K. 55 Powder Mill Road. Basically, I think it's very dangerous that intersection. Just crossing it during rush hour is like playing Russian roulette. What I envision basically is a traffic light there, only on during peak hours, and basically no traffic light there the rest of the time, and a pedestrian push button so people can cross the road. You must remember there's the Haines School, which is nearby, and kids can't walk across there. Also, the other thing you have to remember, that 117 is a east-west running road, and in the morning, if you are going down Powder Mill Road, crossing that, sometimes you cannot see because of the sun glare on both and vice versa on the way back. Thank you.
Good. Yep, right over here. And I'll move this way.
Good evening, everyone. Manish Short, 177 Colony Road. So my question is, I see resources not being shared with one of the FinCom members. My question to Mr. Nason is there any and all availability within a timeline that would permit you to walk him through his responses? And my last follow-up question is, there has to be some federal funding available, which you have certainly not shared with the taxpayers. Are you aware of it? Are you not aware of it? Department of Transportation could help us out. I mean, certainly there's like two ways to look into it. Safety is the major priority. Thanks a lot for accommodations. Take it away.
Mr. Nathan.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. We're constantly looking for grant funding, particularly through MassDOT, so thank you for that question. There is one grant that we're still looking at utilizing for this project. However, the timing doesn't work out. If we hold off and we wait another 8 months or so to file for that, prices may escalate, but it's still not a guarantee. We can file for it, but we may not get it. That's the bottleneck grant through MassDOT. And I apologize. What was your first question?
Can you speak into the microphone? I think he can hear you.
My apologies.
I'm sorry. So my question was, it seems like some folks have information, some do not have information. What would it take for you to bridge the gap and be more fully furnished with your documents? I mean, to get an answer when you're asking for funding that you're not given a yay or an A, not following up with, you know, substantial reasoning, it doesn't make sense to the taxpayer to just come forward and put the bill and make a, you know, vote. So that's all I have to offer. Just think from a common sense approach. You're the subject matter expert, and I'll leave it up to you, sir. Thank you.
Mr. Nathan.
Madam Moderator, thank you. Some of the comments that were made at the Finance Committee meeting, I did not feel was appropriate for me to answer. Particularly ones relative to the design and some aspects of the design that I felt were not fair to the residents, like installing a ramp in front of their homes, an overhead ramp, and having us to design it to get heavy equipment over the ramp. I don't think anyone would not want that in their front yard. So I didn't feel it was responsible for me to answer those questions.
Okay. In the center here, you can get a microphone from the center. And then if our back Girl Scout could kind of move over there, and we'll go immediately back after this comment.
Good evening. Jonathan Lansing, 262 Mossman Road. So I'm very familiar with the intersection in question, something that my family and I travel through on a regular basis, daily basis, and it can be very difficult to get through that intersection, especially during rush hour periods, and it tends to get dangerous. There have been multiple times where we've been nearly hit by other cars, and we have observed many near accidents, and I'm aware of several accidents that have occurred over the past few years. So I think it would be very beneficial for us to have a traffic signal at this intersection.
Mr. Joachim?
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Is it on?
I think it is.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to clarify that the Finance Committee as a whole is in no way questioning the quality of the project or the information we received. We're not traffic experts. It's nothing along those lines. Our focus is on the financial planning aspect of this article. We have many capital projects coming to us, and our position is that we should not be voting on one out of context. We want to see the whole picture, understand all of the projects, all of the needs, all of the potential funding, and then make our decisions. And so that's why we're asking to postpone until May so we can get that fuller picture. We're not commenting on the answers of the project itself. It's the process. It's the overall look at the financial capital needs of the town.
And Ms. Roberts, did you have a comment too?
Yes, I think
it's on. No. Keep talking.
All right, I think it's on. Thank you for all the advice. So I just wanted to address a resident comment from earlier, lest anyone be confused. Associated with the Coldbrook Crossing project, there were three major buckets of fund, all around $1 million. The first one was what I believe were called the mitigation funds, $1 million, the proceeds of sale for $1 million, and the $1.1 million in the Malone Stabilization Funds, which we've just transferred to the Capital Stabilization Funds. And none of those have been used for other projects. I believe the first million has, well, the first million has been put towards the intersection at Pantry and 117, which Director Nason has already discussed. But the other two remain unspent. So that's a true statement, right? Okay, I just wanted to clarify that for the hall.
Okay, and then in the front here, please. And I think we're going to just take a couple more, and then we're going to move to a vote.
Rami Alwan, 119 Pantry Road, and you'll excuse me for not standing. I've got an injured back.
Sure.
I just want to take a little... with Mr. Joachim, who said that we're sort of taking this out of order, when the Malone property was transferred to Coldbrook, this was on the agenda of a project that was supposed to be done because of for traffic mitigation and anticipated traffic in North Sudbury. So I really don't feel that we're taking this out of order. I feel that this is something that needs to be done and should have been was expected and should be done and is now is the time to be doing it.
I'm going to go to the gentleman with the hat sitting down.
Hi, Tyler Steffi, 5 Checkerberry Circle. I'm surprised up till now that only one member of the group here has discussed the impact this would have on students getting to Haynes. There are handfuls of students every day that walk across that, my own included, and this would be hugely impactful to students trying to get to school by foot. FinCom, with all due respect, I think you guys are honorably focusing on process, and I respect and understand that. I think, and I urge you to pass this, thinking about the students who are trying to, with their families, get across Mossman, which depends on eye contact with drivers to get across that street, and it's dangerous, very, very dangerous. I urge passing this, please, thinking about students trying to do their environmental duty by walking to school. Thank you.
Okay, we'll have one last comment in the middle here.
Devick Lansing, 262
Mossman.
There you go.
Devick Lansing,
262 Mossman. Yes, as my husband said, we drive this every day. But I just want to echo what Mr. Steffi was just talking about. Putting a ramp over 117 isn't going to solve the problem of kids needing to walk. The challenge is turning left from Powder Mill or turning left from Mossman. It's very difficult across a major intersection like 117 where the speed is high, and particularly in the mornings and the afternoons when there's large amounts of traffic, people get frustrated. And they're waiting, and they're waiting. And while I appreciate it takes longer than 30 minutes to get into Cambridge, let's be honest, one traffic light is not going to triple your time to get into Cambridge. But it will stop the people who are in a hurry from trying to cut fast, not following the law, waiting for the turn, the people that have right-of-way. It gets frustrating. People take shortcuts. Kids are walking across. People take shortcuts, they can't see the kids. We have seen cars flip over upside down at this intersection a summer and a half ago. We've seen really crazy accidents. I have a child, Mr. Steffi does too. There are many. We don't even have consistent sidewalks. That's a whole nother issue. But for children that do need to walk there, it is really dangerous. When we voted for the Malone project, instead of putting in a development in downtown Sudbury, to have that be put in Malone, it was on the PowerPoint slides, Pantry Road and Mossman Road, both of those. We have just moved $1.1 million back into capital funds. Let's use that money to approach this. Again, I appreciate that the Finance Committee wants us to look at the total picture of all capital funds. I get it. However, we have already talked about this 3 years ago when we did the Malone transfer. This has already been in the minds of residents of North Sudbury, and we've just moved $1.1 million. That was for the maintenance of a sand pit that no longer exists. Let's leverage that money and make this intersection safe for our children and our families.
Quantum of vote required for passage of Article 10 is 2/3. Yes? Do you have a point of order?
No, point of information.
I'm sorry?
Point of information.
Sure.
How much money is in the state?
Name and address, please.
Tom Travers, 32 Old Framingham Road in Sudbury.
And this will be the very last one, and then we're moving to a vote.
How much money is in the stabilization fund before the transfer of the $1.1 million?
Town Manager Sheehan, can you answer that?
In the capital stabilization, we had about $1.5 million prior to the previous article. So we now have about $2.6 million.
Thank you very much. That's important information. By the way, crossing on, I lived on Mossman Road for 36 years. It's more than looking in people's eyes. It's closing your eyes, blinking to get across that intersection.
Okay, the quantum of vote required for passage of Article 10 is 2/3. Voting is now open. Few more seconds on voting. Okay, voting is now closed. Article 10 passes by more than 2/3 majority. Article 11, Nixon Elementary School Roof Schematic Design Funds, motion by Select Board.
Move that the town vote to transfer from free cash the sum of $248,000 to be expended under the direction of the School Building Committee for schematic design for the replacement of the roof at Nixon Elementary School located at 472 Concord Road, Sudbury, Mass., including the payment of all costs incidental or related thereto, provided further that such proposed repair project would materially extend the useful life of the school and preserve an asset that otherwise is capable of supporting the required educational program and for which town may be eligible for a grant from the Massachusetts School Building Authority, MSBA, with the town acknowledging that the MSBA's grant
program is a non-entitlement discretionary program based on need, as determined by the MSBA, and any cost the town incurs in excess of any grant approved and received from the MSBA shall be the sole responsibility of the town.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Town Facilities Director Sandra Duran.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Sandra Duran, Combined Facility Director. As you have just heard, this is a request for funds to support a schematic design and to prepare ourselves for getting accurate cost estimates for a fall town meeting. The project would be for approximately half of the Nixon School roof. The roof itself is, half of it is about 30 years old and it's in need of replacement. SPS intends on applying for the MSBA Accelerated Repair Program. And this article positions us for the replacement of the roof with or without the MSBA funding. Should the MSBA not open the Accelerated Repair Program in 2024, or not invite this project in the accelerated repair project process, the article will allow the roof project to continue without waiting additional years. This article takes into consideration all the scheduling requirements and the 2024 annual town meeting, the scheduling requirements of the MSBA application process, and the statement of interest. This article starts the design and development process and allows debt or other funding planning with the town finance director and finance committee for the full replacement of the project. Do you have the presentation? I'll keep going. There you go. In the photo here, what you see is an aerial of the Nixon School. The area that you see of white roof is a part of the part of the school project that was replaced about 10 years ago. That was replaced in June of 2023 with a PVC single-ply roof system. In the front entrance, there's a shingled portion of the roof. In July of 2015, that front entrance shingled area was also removed and replaced. What is remaining is the area that is shown is black. That's the EPDM roof, and this article should say that the request is to replace the remaining EPDA fund areas for design funds. The request is for design funds to replace the roof. The following are just a few photographs of the actual roof so you can see the condition. This is the 30-year-old portion of the roof. We have many, many, many patches along all of the skylights and roof areas. It's patches amongst patches amongst patches. There are active leaks that we consistently and constantly chase, long, long areas of leakage and cracking, and lifts of the seams. Again, these are for design funds in order to prepare us for replacing the roof. It is a 30-year-old roof. And it also does position us well for the MSBA funding should we be invited into the program. Thank you for your consideration, and I'm happy to take questions if anyone has any.
Select Board report.
Select Board recommends support.
Finance Committee report.
The Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 8-0. We discussed how the Nixon roof is 30 years old, and at the end of its life, it frequently leaks and needs repairs. We appreciate that the replacement of the roof has been included on the SPS long-term capital plan for several years, and we do support funding the plan now rather than at May town meeting, so that if SPS learns early that there's no opportunity to receive the MSBA funds, that it can move forward right away with the plan.
CIAC report.
The CIAC voted in favor of Article 11 by a vote of 7-0.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 11? Over here, please.
Good evening, everyone. Manish Sharma, 77 Colonial Road. One thing I didn't hear in this commentary was there any repairs fixtures that basically could be added by the current, you know, project folks who went and did the patches to give us an extra life of it? Is the OSB board off? Can the OSB board be removed? We don't need to do the entire thing. And if you're going to go for a funding, why would you not reach out to the Department of Education and have them look into federal funding dollars to help the town? As of the historical, you know, provisions given in the timelines I've been associated with the town, burden of proof to foot expenses has been borne by the taxpayers. I would rather see that money go to some other avenue for repairs, maintenance, and I would want a, you know, well thought out, you know, provision over there, and as well as the skewing of your resources or pricing. My question is, specific question, are we going to be given government pricing of this, or commercial or residential pricing? Thanks so much for the accommodations. Thank you.
Ms. Duran, can you answer that?
I believe your question was whether or not we would have governmental pricing. All of the work that we are that we do here in the town is requires prevailing wage. So I'm not sure what your definition is of governmental pricing, but it would be prevailing wage, and it would be what the market would bear.
Anyone else on Article 11? I don't see anyone. Quantum of vote required for passage of Article 11 is majority. Voting is now open. Few more seconds on voting. Voting is now closed on Article 11. That passes by more than majority. Article 12, increase to FY24 Sudbury Public Schools General Fund appropriation for additional Chapter 70 state aid. Motion by Select Board.
Move that the town vote to raise and appropriate the additional amount of $232,380 to be added to the amount appropriated under Article 3 of the 2023 annual town meeting for the FY24 Sudbury Public Schools, which amount shall be offset by the increase to the FY2024 Chapter 70 funding approved by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts dedicated to local school districts.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by SPS Superintendent Brad Crozier.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Brad Crozier, Sudbury Superintendent. I would like to begin by thanking the community for their ongoing support of the schools. The state has recognized the need for an increase in state funding for the schools through a $6.59 billion increase in Chapter 70 funding for this year. According to the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, DESE, the Chapter 70 program is the major program of state aid to public elementary and secondary schools. This state aid is designed to support school operations by providing support to students through programs, services, staffing, and funding the day-to-day operations. The $232,380 increase in the FY24 general fund appropriation for SPS accounted for the increase in estimated aid by the town finance director for FY23. In other words, the state is increasing our Chapter 70 aid by $341,810, which included the $109,430 that the town finance director had planned or estimated in the FY24 budget process. The remainder is what is what this article is about, which is $232,380, which was an unanticipated one-time amount related to this historic base adjustment for Chapter 70 education state aid from the governor and legislature. Some have asked, what will the funds pay for? As we have discussed at finance and finance committee and board of select meetings, in the current school year, we use the funds to address unanticipated student needs throughout the district. We have seen an increase in several of our increased needs in several of our student populations. One specific example is that since the budget was approved in May, we have seen a significant rise in students whose first language is not English, and they require specialized instruction in order for them to access educational programming. With a nearly 20% increase in that population this year, the instructional staff's caseloads are over capacity as defined by DESE in their program guidelines for English language learners. We've also experienced an increase in contractual services, which is a direct result of the tight labor market that many sectors are experiencing in addition to schools. The contract services includes items such as using agencies for staffing and contractors for testing and evaluation that would otherwise be completed by SPS staff who are directly serving students this year. It has been reported across the nation that mental health needs of students continue to be a concern, and in Sudbury that's no different. So those three buckets from a monetary perspective to really address the 20% increase in students whose first language is not English, it would range from about $80,000 to $120,000 in staffing. The contracted service bucket that I mentioned before is currently running over budget by about $90,000. And it would certainly be beneficial to add mental and behavioral supports to address the needs of students, and we would do that by increasing some of our part-time staff or on an hourly or contracted basis. These Chapter 70 funds would be used to really adjust those three areas. And finally, just a few other bullet points. This increase is a permanent increase to the town's Chapter 70 funding base, which will continue in years future based on the state's funding requirements. It is a one-time increase to Chapter 70 base, and it was approved through the state's what they call the historic investment for all schools in FY23. And as I mentioned previously, Sudbury would use these funds in the manner that they were intended, which is to address student needs. Because the state approved this supplemental funding on August 9th, these additional funds were not included in the FY24 budget process nor annual town meeting, which is why we're requesting them today. This increase is unique and specific, separate from Sudbury's standard annual budgeting process and the state aid budgeting methods used by the town. Thank you.
Select Board report.
The Select Board voted 4-1 in support of Article 12. First and foremost, we support our schools and their needs. We also greatly respect the work of the Finance Committee in reviewing this article. In arriving at the vote, the Select Board took into consideration the SPS budget override of $745,000 that passed at the ballot in the annual town meeting this past spring. When the override was being planned by SPS, the decision was made to use $300,000 of circuit breaker funds intended for special education to be used to offset the amount of the override. At that time, multiple Select Board members expressed concerns about the use of circuit breaker and whether or not the final override would adequately meet the longer-term needs of SPS. Therefore, we view the addition of the $232,000 in Chapter 70 funds above the approved SPS budget as a buffer for unanticipated needs and to mitigate risk created by use of circuit breaker reserve. Throughout the time leading up to town meeting, the Select Board would have preferred more clear answers on how the Chapter 70 funds would be used. However, we recognize that the timeline leading up to town meeting is compressed. We hope that the community will learn more this evening about the future use of the Chapter 70 funds. As we head into this fall, the Select Board looks forward to the town and SPS working closely together for the FY25 budget with a comprehensive review of department needs throughout the town.
Finance Committee report.
The Finance Committee voted to recommend against approval by a vote of 6-1. I'll start out by saying that we too support the schools and feel strongly about providing adequate funding for the schools, but we believe that voting against is in the best financial interest of the town. There has been a lot of confusion around this article, so I'd like to take a moment to clarify a fact or two and then explain our position. First, in terms of facts, there's been a concern in town that if we do not pass this article, the $232,000 intended for the schools will instead go to the town's general funds or to free cash and be used for some purpose other than the schools. That's simply not the case. Every year, we set our school budget at the May town meeting based on an estimate of how much Chapter 70 money we'll get from the state and how much money we'll take from the taxpayers to fund the schools. And by the way, the state amount is about 10%, and the taxpayers fund 90% of the total school budget. We start taxing during the year based on our estimate, but when we get the actual Chapter 70 number, we adjust our tax rate up or down to make sure that we raise the correct amount of money that we promised the schools in May. This happens every year behind the scenes. So this year, because Chapter 70 is $232,000 higher than the estimate, we would lower our property taxes by that amount to make sure we have the money to fund the town meeting budget, the budget that the town meeting provided the schools in May. So in other words, if we vote no here, all of the Chapter 70 money still goes to the schools, but the taxpayers pay $232,000 less, and the town does not wind up with any extra money. If we vote yes here, we raise the school budget by $232,000, the amount that Chapter 70 went up, and we will not be able to adjust the taxes. So to be clear, a yes vote means higher taxes than a no vote. So in terms of our position, last spring, SPS came to the voters and told us that they needed an additional $750,000 beyond their allocated budget to meet student needs. At the polls and at town meeting, the taxpayers voted to support the extra $750,000 and agreed to a Proposition 2.5 override and higher taxes to fund that higher amount of budget. Since then, the state has passed its budget and has recognized the sorts of school needs that already led us in town to increase the SPS budget. The state is giving Sudbury an extra $232,000 to help us pay for these needs, which again, we already recognize and agreed to pay for. By giving us the $232,000, the state is essentially taking some of the burden off of town taxpayers to fund those increased needs. It's helping the taxpayers pay for about a third of the $750,000 that we gave SPS last May on top of its budget. That's number one. Number two, every town in the Commonwealth is in the same situation, as our regional high schools. And we have asked around, and to our knowledge, no other town is increasing its school budget. We've only asked a few, admittedly, but we've spoken to Lincoln, and they're not increasing their school budget. And importantly, LS, where our kids go, they're not increasing their budget either. Their Chapter 70 amount goes up, so their assessment to the two towns goes down, and they keep the same budget. So a no vote keeps SPS consistent with how we're treating LS this year. Number three, we have many capital needs coming to the town, as I mentioned earlier, the four school roofs, the Atkinson project, the Route 117 fixes that we've just talked about. And we don't have the funds on hand to pay for those, so we will likely have to increase our taxes in order to cover those expenses. In addition, as you've seen in past town meetings, there are many unfunded needs within the town, including the police officer that Chief Nix has been asking for several years, and the fire inspector that Chief Wayland has mentioned. With all of these kinds of expenses and costs on the horizon, we're reluctant to ask more from the taxpayers now. And finally, we do recognize that the schools have more needs, and we are confident that if we gave this money to LS, it would be used to support the students. But we also know that if we gave LS more money, it would be used for the students as well. And if we gave the town money, it would be used for important things like public safety or other key needs. So the question now is where to draw the limits, and the FinCom believes that the limit should be the budget that we voted on last May.
Discussion on Article 12. Ms. Nam?
Jean Nam, 81 Newbridge Road. I just wanted to say that my family, we are here because of the schools. We appreciate everything it's doing for our children. We appreciate what it's doing for our house value. This is why we're here. And I think that's why a lot of people are in Sudbury, for the schools. So while I might appreciate what the FinCom might say about we have a lot of expenses and things are, you know, prices are only going up, that's fine. But, you know, we just agreed to spend $900,000 on the community center because of budget overrides. We just agreed to spend $100,000 because we can't decide if the pool is okay or not. And that $100,000 is just design funds for what's going to be probably $1 million in construction. So I understand prices are going up. But when it comes to this town and what our values are, I think education is at the center of that. So this $200,000 is coming from the state because they realize that the entire state, in fact, the entire country, needs more funding for education. So let's let it go to where it should go. Thank you.
Other comments on Article 12? In the very back, please.
Mary Weldon, 15 Harness Lane. Point of clarification. So the $232,000 is a differential this year. Can we assume safely that the $341,000 is what 70B will be next year?
Mr. Crozier, can you answer that question?
I can take a stab at it. The Chapter 70 money that the state provides to towns, they have a funding formula, and every year that formula, they follow the rules on funding. It's currently called the Student Opportunity Act, so they have a methodology for that funding. Their plan is to continue to increase our base amount, so the 300,000 that is in the Chapter 70 coming for SPS should not only be that amount, but a factor larger depending on the final vote of the legislature and governor.
Thank you. And a follow-up question for FinCom. The $232,000, can you tell the audience what the household impact is on tax savings?
Mr. Joachim?
My understanding from talking to Mr. Cohen is that for the average house in Sudbury, it's a $35 difference.
Annually.
And the average 900-something thousand-dollar value house.
Other comments, questions on this article? In the front here?
Please give it a minute.
Okay. Sarah Troiano, 342 Lincoln Road. I did prepare some notes. Basically, to me, this is a really straightforward article. I think it's become quite overcomplicated. The fact is that the state of Massachusetts took proactive measures in recognition that historically funding of public education in our state has been too low. This is an effort by Maura Healey and the legislature to make things more correct in that regard. The reason it's been historically underfunded is one issue. They also are taking this action because they recognize that the needs of students in the Commonwealth have also expanded greatly in the recent time period, specifically the pandemic, and also that, frankly, the cost of education has gone up, the inflation that we've been talking about. So proactively, they took this out-of-cycle effort to make this one-time investment to essentially raise the floor on public education across the state. And that's what this one-time adjustment is about. The $348,000, which we've already had the benefit of $109,000 from the estimate that was made in last year's budget. But there's a delta of $232,000 of incremental dollars that the state legislature intends to be used for our children now, not next year, after we go through another school year and there's time for the additional appropriation. The methodology that was articulated for Chapter 70 funding remains intact for the normal way of business. This is not a normal situation. This is a one-time situation where the state of Massachusetts is essentially, in recognition of underfunding, saying, here, Sudbury, have this money to help your students. And I understand that throughout this process, there have been questions about how the funds would be used, and I hope that the superintendent was able to more clearly answer some of those questions tonight. I think in answering questions like that, you want to provide clarity, but I think there should be some sensitivity to the fact that it wouldn't be appropriate to dive into too much detail as to all the unique and specific needs of students that are being met. He did share a lot tonight about the 20% increase that we learned about this summer for English language learners. So if you think about it, the budget that we do for the schools is done essentially a year before the school year at hand. So there's a lot of assumptions that are made. They were made in the last winter. And then even with the override budget, where we asked for additional money, which is super appreciated, those decisions about the amount to ask for were made in February, essentially, or in the early winter. Things do change. There are ins and outs. And ins and outs are not just one student in, one student out. With every student that comes in, there's a correlated different set of needs that come in. So the superintendent hopefully provided some examples as to what this kind of $232,000 could be used for. There are unanticipated needs that we have right now this school year. For us to wait for the normal, to roll all of this extra one-time historic action by the legislature and the governor into the normal Chapter 70 process is doing a disservice to our students that are in classrooms today. Those needs that he articulated, the ELL, the additional contracted services, if there are students that are in the schools for whom we can't provide services, we have to contract those out. Those costs have gone up exponentially, even since the summer. So we have these needs today. They're unanticipated needs, and the $232,000 that we can get by enacting this measure, which essentially is to take the money from the state and administratively make sure it gets to the schools before the typical Chapter 70 process and budgeting for the next year. This is an opportunity for us to get the money in the hands of the students that have the needs today. Does it represent a change of process? Absolutely. But this is also a one-time historic event. So I do know that we all come here, many people, not all, but many people come here because we value our students, we value education, and our governor wanted this money for this purpose, the legislature wants the money for this purpose. I think it behooves us to get access to these funds as soon as possible so that our students can benefit from them immediately. So I urge you to vote yes in support of this article. Thank you.
I want to be mindful of the time. I think I will take one more comment or question if there is one. We have two more articles to get through in the next 19 minutes. Question in the front, please, and then we will move to a vote.
Kirsten Rapenian, 45 Harns Lane. I have a question for the superintendent, Mr. Crozier, or the FinCom. If this money, I mean, this is short money, $35 per household to invest in your students. I want to make sure, though, as a parent,
who used to have children in the school, but I still believe that quality education in any community, specifically in the one that I live in, is job one. I want to make sure, though, if this money is expended now, what happens to the budget going forward in the spring? Does that mean that there will be a reduction of that amount of money, or does this mean that everything just stays the same going forward? Do you understand what I'm asking?
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that I'll be able to answer it directly. Next year, we will have a budget process. It actually starts in November, where we begin to talk to staff. We meet with town staff to express what our needs are, and we have a series of school committee meetings that we discuss what our needs are, and that's how we build the budget. We will have an estimate of what the Chapter 70 funding is, and we'll work with the town to find out what our budget guidance is, and that's just part of our annual budget process. So I don't know.
Does anybody from FinCom want to answer that question?
Our understanding is that the 232 would go into the SPS base budget, and that we would see next year that base budget plus whatever adjustment the town decides to provide.
Okay. Quantum of vote required for passage of Article 12 is majority. Voting is now open. Give it a few more seconds. Our voting on Article 12 is closed. Article 12 passes by more than majority. Article 13, funding of state-approved special education out-of-district tuition cost increase. Motion by Select Board.
Move that the town vote to authorize the school committee to accept and expend any additional monies that may be made available in FY 2024 to the town by the state legislature pursuant to Chapter 70 or otherwise, and from any other federal, state, or local grant program for school departments.
Is there a second? Second? There is. Presentation by Superintendent Crozier.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Brad Crozier, Sudbury Superintendent. This should be a fairly quick article. Just for some background information on this particular article, the state authorized special education service providers to increase tuitions by 14%. The state also has been working for a number of months on different ways to mitigate the impact of that 14% increase that districts have faced. They haven't done that yet, but there's been several conversations at the state level on how they could mitigate that 14% increase. This article provides a pathway for potential funding to offset this increase for the current school year. If the funding doesn't come through, then we won't have the benefit of receiving those funds. It's not the case that we're seeking funds from other areas within the town budget. A couple just additional bullets. I think I covered the first one. What the state is intending to do is to create a one-time funding mechanism to cover for this school year any of those increases, because in the next school budget, these become eligible for reimbursement through the Circuit Breaker Fund. So it's really just a one-time opportunity that the state's trying to bridge all the districts in the Commonwealth so that they can move past this 14% increase. And I do want to publicly thank Carmen Gentile for co-sponsoring this bill. We're hoping that it'll come through. And again, this just creates a pathway for the funding. We're not sure if it's going to come as a grant an earmark or exactly how it's going to come, but if it comes, then we would like to benefit from it. So thank you.
Select Board report.
Select Board supports.
Finance Committee report.
The Finance Committee voted 6-1 to recommend against approval. At this time, we do not know if the legislature will provide the additional funding, how much we would receive, and what form the additional money would take. We note that if the money were appropriated directly to school districts as a grant, as has been customary in the past, or by using the existing special education circuit breaker mechanism, it would flow to SPS without this article. But if it were to come in some other form, it could raise as yet unknown issues with respect to the full budget. The FinCom recommends that the town wait and to see whether and how additional funds become available and address the issue at the spring town meeting.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 13? I do not see anybody. Article 13, the quantum of vote required for passage is majority. Voting is now open. Give that a couple more seconds. Voting is closed on Article 13. It's electronic, so we don't have to have a hand count, which would put us here well past 10:30. So that article failed. Yes, in the back or up here. So if you don't press it before I close the vote, I think once it's closed, it's closed. I gave it several seconds, and then if anybody has an issue before I say I'm going to close it soon or I'm giving it a couple more seconds, please raise your hand at that point. So I can't go back in time. If anybody has an issue, you need to raise it as we're going along. Before we take up the last article, I would once again like to thank all of the town staff who worked so hard to put this together. Yes? In the balcony, please come downstairs because the receiver is down here. We have plenty of seating. I'd appreciate if you could come down while we're sorting this out. Okay. I've consulted with town council, and we're going to move on to the last article. I'd like to thank town staff for all their hard work.
Article 2, Section 13 says we can have a two-third vote to reconsider, so I form the motion.
Is there a second on the motion to reconsider?
Second.
Okay. We're going to have to give staff time to get that vote up for a motion to reconsider.
Thank you.
that ready? Is the system ready? So I'm going to have everybody test their clickers right now. Yes? Can somebody bring him a microphone, please?
Thomas Hickey, 81 Shadow Oak Drive, Sudbury. So points of order, section 1, C, is there some error in the procedure of the pending action or motion? I heard you note the discussion of raising your hand if there was a problem. There was no discussion made. And then in the event of a motion to reconsider is properly made and seconded, all discussion must be confined exclusively to the merits. Excuse me. In general, the only proper reasons to seek reconsideration are that there was occurred such a misstatement of fact or law in the preceding debate or such an error of procedure that the voters, if aware of such discrepancies, would have voted differently. It is not proper basis for reconsideration to argue simply that the voters arrived at the wrong result. I feel that's where we are.
So we're going to do a motion for reconsideration, which is a two-thirds vote, before we even get to re-voting. Clicker system is very new, so I would like to have some confidence in that, so we're going to re-vote on that.
The motion for reconsideration is improper. Thank you.
Can we please have a test of the clickers right now? Okay, it needs to be opened. Test your clickers, please. Test your clickers. Press A or B. Doesn't matter. Make sure you see the word okay. Okay, anybody having a problem with their clicker? Okay, so we're going to close that. We're going to vote on a motion for reconsideration, which means one means yes, I want to go back and revisit that. Two means no, I want to move on to the last article. This is a two-thirds passage. Voting on the motion for reconsideration is open. Can you point it towards the receiver? Okay. He's good. He's got it. Okay, I'll give it a couple more seconds. Okay, I'm going to close the motion to reconsider. And that does not pass. So, again, we are going to move on to Article 14. Thank you to Town Clerk and Town Council, who always make sure that we have met our legal obligations along the way. It is extremely helpful for me to have such clear and competent guidance and advice over the course of the meeting. Thank you to all of you, our citizen legislatures, for caring enough about your town to participate in this process, your ability to balance passion for the issues with a civility of... Yes? Can you wait for a microphone, please?
Nancy Brombach, 36 Canterbury Drive. On page Roman numeral 3 of the warrant, item 5, it says, if 7 or more voters doubt the vote, the town moderator may request another vote using the handheld technology.
So we've already done a reconsideration, and now we're moving on to Article 14 at this point. Article 14, Resolution, Massachusetts Official Seal and Motto. And that is a citizen's petition. I'm going to invite Mr. Hardenberg up.
Jan Hardenberg, 7 Tippling Rock Road, move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? Thank you. Presentation, please.
Thank you. Next page. So this will be very brief. Essentially, this is a motion to put Sudbury on record as voting to change the seal and the flag of the Commonwealth. We'd be the 78th town to do so. So the towns in blue have voted yes, and towns voting against in red. Next. The current seal has three design elements. There's a motto, there's a shield portraying an indigenous man, and an arm holding a sword. Once I saw the arm as holding the sword over the man's head, it became hard for me not to see that every time I look at it. This is not a symbol I want representing my state, and I hope you feel the same way. This article explicitly supports the work of the Special Commission on the official seal and motto of the Commonwealth. This commission will make a recommendation, which might be a tree or an outline of the coast or state bird have been mentioned. They just completed a survey, statewide survey, and they will be discussing the results at their next meeting on Wednesday. So one more. Oh yeah. So those are some of the recommendations, but the survey discussed on Wednesday will be where things really pick up. So one more. So the reason I'm standing here, I put this petition together, recruited friends to get 130 signatures, is that in April I participated in a forum about the roadside markers in Sudbury, and there are three of them that deal with the Sudbury fight during the King Philip's War. I originally took the petition position that these markers were factually accurate. Language isn't terrible. They do need a counter-narrative, and they need a broad context. But the markers themselves should be kept. However, the panel turned out to be more about the markers statewide, and one of the big issues people had was the seal at the top of the marker. And once I sort of figured that out, I could no longer support keeping the markers that we have. But if we just remove the markers and we don't put up anything, then we're missing a foothold into the history of the events that happened, the fact that there's still a Nipmuc Nation that's alive and well in our region. So for me, the way forward is to change the seal and then change the markers. Please vote yes to make Sudbury the 78th town to support changing the seal. Thank you.
Select Board report.
Select Board supports.
Finance Committee report.
The Finance Committee did not take a position on this article.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 14? I don't see. Oh, in the back.
Hi, Nena Nikki, Sudbury resident, Eddy Street. I'm also a member of the Diversity and Equity Inclusion Commission in town. And I stand before you today to represent the commission in support of this article. We would like to express our strong support for Article 14, which calls for the endorsement of state-level efforts to change the Massachusetts seal and motto. A vote in favor of this resolution would not only be symbolic, but a resounding declaration of Sudbury's unwavering commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. As a point of reference, the seal, as we just saw, depicts a disembodied arm holding Miles Standish's braid sword over the head of an indigenous person. The motto in Latin is in Latin, and it translates to, "She seeks the sword, a quiet peace under liberty." Thank you for your support.
In the front here, please.
Henry Nord, 55 Goodmanshill Road. I'm sorry, Jan, I don't see the objection that you see there. I see an indigenous person featured prominently, and I think that's appropriate to our history.
Other comments? In the back, please, or middle back.
Hi, Ravi Simon, 437 Coldbrook Drive. In reference to the last comment, I want to note a couple historical details. First of all, the seal that we have now is based, it was formalized in the 1890s, but it is based on the seal for the Massachusetts Bay Company, which was created in the 1600s. It is very much intentional that the indigenous person there has an arrow that is pointing downwards. It is supposed to indicate that that indigenous person has been pacified. That's why there's a sword being held above their head. So, this was very much around the time of King Philip's War, and it was intended to be a representation of the fact that that Massachusetts had successfully pacified its native population. This is an incredibly racist iconography. Indigenous people across the state for decades have been calling for the seal to be changed. They have come to the State House year after year to testify on this. There is pretty much unanimous support from indigenous people in the Commonwealth that this seal is racist and that it makes them uncomfortable when they enter public spaces or government buildings in which the seal is prominently displayed, as it is on my jacket right now as a state employee. It is very often that we wear the seal and we present things that have the seal on them to, you know, people for all sorts of reasons. And so I'm really strongly supportive of this. I hope you'll consider voting for it.
Other comments on Article 14? In the back.
Katina Fontes, Dorothy Road. And I echo much of what Ravi just shared with you there. I would like to note, in terms of the indigenous person on the seal, that image is not an image of an indigenous person from this region. It's the face of a man who is Chippewa from Montana. And his image was used because he was, quote, a fine specimen of an Indian, unquote. And the skeletal, the body was constructed from the skeletal remains of a body that was found somewhere in the state, under the assumption that perhaps Native Americans had different bodies than other people. So keep that in mind. It is not an image of someone who is Wampanoag or Nipmuc or Massachusetts. It is the image of a stereotype of an indigenous person. So for that reason, the indigenous community has been lobbying to change this symbol for a long period of time. And there are six members on the state commission who are indigenous, and the commission itself voted unanimously to recommend changes to the state seal and the flag. And for that reason, I really urge all of you to vote yes for this, because it's a statement that we're making as a community, that we reject racist images that basically uphold white supremacy. So we should take a stand, along with the 77 other communities in the state. We would be the 78th who have form some sort of resolution in support of this change at the state level. Thank you.
Other comments or questions on Article 14? I don't see any. Quantum of vote required for passage of Article 14 is majority. Voting is now open. I'll have to give that a couple more seconds. Okay, voting is closed on Article 14. That passes by more than majority. Before we leave, a final reminder to turn in your voting keypad to the election workers. At this time, do I have a motion to dissolve this 2023 Fall Town Meeting? Is there a second? Mm-hmm. All in favor? Thank you. Anybody opposed?